You're listening to the ISACA podcast. In today's Security Series podcast, we're speaking with Frank Downs, Director and Subject Matter Expert of ISACA's Cybersecurity Practice, and Dustin Brewer, Manager and Cybersecurity Product Platform Developer. In this podcast, we're speaking about the Collection 1 data breach, which is being called the mother of all breaches. So to begin, can you both give us some background about this breach and why it's so significant?
So recently there was this new collection discovered, and it's being called Collection Number 1 in the community, and it's considered to be the largest public data breach by volume. So what does that mean? That means over 700 million specific unique emails and over 20 million unique passwords were exposed. Now, this is bigger than anything we've seen so far that we're aware of. That's something that, you know, I like to emphasize in discussions about this. Yes, it's the biggest breach that we know, because each time that these breaches occur, it's huge and so forth, but there's always those breaches here and there that you find out that have been pretty horrific, but have existed for a while. Like, hey, the most recent one with Marriott, for example, it was really big, and up until that point, we had many that were, you know, the biggest on record, but this is an example of that was the biggest that we found to that point. This is just another example of here's one that we know about.
Right. And actually, there's been kind of an update here with collection number one. This is actually collection number one of six. That's what's being reported right now. So collection number one is 772 million. We don't know what the other collections consist of. I guess the person or the people who are responsible for these collections of passwords and email addresses, they'll release them at a certain, I'm sure for a certain amount of money, anybody can get these releases. But again, this is just collection number one out of possibly six. So it's something that happens on a daily basis. On a daily basis, we're getting breaches like this. I think one of the really important things to note about collection number one as well is that the passwords are actually unhashed, meaning that they're in clear text. So it's the actual passwords that these people use for whatever accounts that had been compromised.
And also, another comparison to that Marriott one from a few months ago, this data is supposedly 2 to 3 years old. And that's similar to the Marriott hack that happened, in that that had been going on for, like, I think it was 4 years. Now, that means there's 2 to 3 years where people didn't know their accounts were compromised. There's two ways to look at this, right? Either this data has become stale and old and not very useful anymore, or those people who never changed their passwords, well, they've been compromised for 2 to 3 years in this instance. Pretty discouraging in that regard.
And so where are the data that are being compromised in this breach found, and how were they collected?
Yeah, so I think the collection number one is a collection of different breaches that have happened. Some people are reporting that it's coming from different sources. And like Frank said earlier, we're talking about a span of 3 to 5 years old data. So these could have come from anywhere. As far as how technically these breaches happen, I mean, it would be various exploits, right? So, you know, think about, you know, the Facebook data leak that happened, where it was actually 3 exploits that were used in order to gain final access to the data that the attackers wanted. Again, these can range anywhere from SQL injection to zero-day to just about anything you can think of. Probably some type of physical or human interaction that happened with those as well.
And what's also noteworthy in this instance is when you hear about things like this, usually it's found on the dark web, right? So you need Tor, right, the Onion router, in order to even think about accessing information like this. However, in this instance, when I believe it was Troy Hunt was first discovered this data, it was on Mega. So for those of you that don't know what Mega is, so Kim.com back in the day made this huge cloud server where you could save your data, put anything you want, got in a lot of legal trouble based on what was put up there. Now, he moved his operation over to New Zealand. It's Mega. It's called Mega. I think it's mega.co.nz, if I remember correctly, Dustin.
Yeah, that sounds right. That sounds right. Yep.
And all this data was stored on Mega. And so if you had the link in this instance, which Troy had the link, anyone who had this link could go and access this data. There wasn't anything protecting the data in this instance from just being accessed. You didn't have to log into a VPN or anything like that. You just need the link.
That's right. And a lot of this information is available on the dark web, and a lot of identity protection programs that like the Equifax has and some of the other private identity protection programs. They actually do dark web and deep web scans, and there is a difference between dark web and deep web. Don't let anybody tell you there isn't. But they do dark web and deep web scans to see if if your username and passwords or your common email addresses are in any of these lists, and they do a pretty good job of it. Now there are also other websites you can go to, like I've been pwned, P-W-N-E-D, ivebeenpwned.com. You can actually type in your email address and see if it's included in collection number one, among other breaches as well. Now, that being said, you can also type in your password on this site. And just me coming from a very paranoid background of everything, this is a website you can go to where you can type in your email address and see if it's on any list. And then you can go to another section of their website and type in your password and see if that's been pwned as well. Well, I don't really like to just go ahead and give that information up to a third-party website. Just a little bugaboo of mine, I guess. I just don't like doing that kind of stuff. So just make sure that it's a reputable website and that it's someone who's not just, it's just not another phishing attempt or a way to try to get your username and password. Because if you think about it, you're putting in your email address and your password into the same website. And again, not that I'm saying anything about haveibeenpwned.com. I don't know, who owns them or who runs them. They might be a legitimate company, but I'm just saying, as security professionals, of course, we're always wary about this, and we should also make sure that our users are wary about this kind of stuff as well.
I know in a previous podcast we've discussed password guidelines, but can you tell us a little bit about how often we should be changing our passwords and how we can build secure passwords?
So here's the thing with passwords. They should be changed on a regular basis. Now, depending on which cybersecurity expert, quote unquote, expert you talk to, you're going to get a different answer. Based upon what they say, it could be anywhere from you need to change it every quarter, you have to change it every month, every XYZ. Now, and it gets crazier when you work with different companies. Different companies have different rules. I think I've worked with companies that where you have to change it every 6 weeks. I've worked with companies that never ask you to change it, things along those lines. I think a good hard and fast rule is to change it every time you know there's a breach. I personally like to change mine about once every, let's say, year, unless there's a breach that kind of like really hits out to me. But that said, I don't do password reuse. I heavily invest in LastPass, and by heavily invest, it's completely free. But a password manager. What's great about LastPass specifically in this instance is that you only have to remember one password that can actually grant you access to all your other passwords. The problem is you forget that password. It's out the window, right?
<You're done.
laughs> Completely gone. And that's kind of the trade-off that you make in that instance. Now, there have been instances where there's been attacks, specific attacks, that try to get your LastPass password too, which, well, then you're just in a terrible situation. Now, they've been relatively safe since then, and nothing's foolproof. But changing them, again, on a regular basis when you hear of an incident that specifically impacts you, or for me personally, I do it once a year, for things I haven't heard about, just in case. And I have my strong passwords generated by LastPass. There's a lot of websites I don't even know my password to because LastPass generated a crazy complex password for me, and I put it in, and I don't have to remember it because that's the beauty of LastPass in this instance. As far as NIST guidance and so forth, NIST puts out a bunch of different information on how to make your own strong password. They specifically recommend user-provided passwords that you should check them against existing data breaches, and that it should be a complex password as well. Now, in those instances when people ask how to make a complex password, I always default to a long sentence if they want one that they have to remember. Because think of it, proper sentences have spaces, they have special characters, they have capitals, they have lowercase letters. It's pretty helpful. What do you think, Dustin?
Yeah, absolutely. The NIST 863 Digital Identity Guideline, right? That's, of course, being from the U.S., that we're gonna go ahead and we're gonna push NIST as hard as we can. That also being said, the NIST website is currently down due to the government shutdown. So give it some time when it comes back up and check out NIST 863.3, which is a new guidance. And like Frank said, requiring screening of new passwords against list of commonly used or compromised passwords. So looking at this, basically comparing, having an algorithm that actually compares the user's password to a list of collection one, for example, or any data breaches, right? Or if you have an internal company breach, anything that was compromised there, making sure that people aren't reusing the same passwords. There is some really interesting stuff that came out with the latest NIST guidelines as well, such as the periodic password changing requirements. Actually, they hinder security more than help it, because people are more likely to use formulaic passwords, right? So you can get an old password, and then all you have to do is change the 1 to a 2, and then it's the new password, right? So it's a very interesting document, and when it gets back up online, you should definitely check it out and apply it to your company's practices. That being said, LastPass is free. Also, Google Chrome just recently built in a very similar functionality into the browser. So now when you go and you sign up for a new website, Google Chrome will actually pop up and say, hey, we'll create a complex password for you, and we'll store it. Same thing. You never know what the password is. It's just a big, long string of alphanumeric special characters that fulfill the requirement of the website, and then you never know the password. And so, again, it's one of those things where it's the most secure because, you know, the weakest link, the human, doesn't even know what the password is in this case. That being said, of course, it is stored somewhere, right? Same thing with LastPass. These things are stored somewhere, and if a data breach happens with that, or even locally on your own machine with Google Chrome, it is a possibility for someone to gain your credentials that way. But again, nothing is 100% secure, right? We just don't have that yet. We just have mitigation techniques, which is what again, as good security practitioners, we try to practice what we preach. We try to do. Try to do the best we can and try to prevent as many breaches as possible.
Okay, and so just to speculate a little bit here, what kind of attack could a site like Have I Been Pwned be susceptible to?
I don't know if it's necessarily an attack that would happen, but I don't know who owns it. And actually, I did run a Who Is on Have I Been Pwned, and all the information, of course, has been redacted for privacy reasons on IANA. So, I'm sorry, ICANN. It's a red flag to me because, again, our backgrounds, we were trained to be incredibly paranoid about everything, right? I mean, most security professionals are, and, you know, that's kind of the way that we think. But I don't, not only that, but I don't know if it's storing it somewhere. Is it storing it, like, maybe not for malicious purposes on their end, but if it is storing it somewhere, what happens if that website gets hacked? And all of a sudden they have all these usernames and passwords that people have been, you know, typing into these websites. So, again, and I'm not talking, you know, I'm not saying anything bad about the people who created the site or who created the web app to do this. It could be 100% secure. Nothing's 100% secure, but it could be very secure web app. When it comes to stuff like that, where you're putting in your username and you're putting in your password into the same website that has nothing to do with the website that you're actually trying to log into, that is shady to me.
I agree. And something that you want to also keep an eye out on, maybe the website itself is completely vetted and 100% reliable.
Right.
But if you have a website like this that leverages, I don't know, say like some type of Google Ads or some type of ads capability, there could be malware advertising, right? Malvertising, I think, is the attack.
Yeah.
Right? Or some other kind of redirection capability that will, you know, take your credentials, take whatever you type in there, and save it. This could be a completely legitimate site on, for example, if you have one of these, 30 check, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's not susceptible like everything else is.
Right.
So there have been a lot of ads for products that say that they are 100% effective in preventing all cyber attacks. Is that possible? And if not, how are they making these kinds of claims?
Well, you know, it comes down to human ingenuity, really. A lot of hackers are people who are just curious people, and they want to see if they can try to break something, right? Not out of malicious purposes or anything like that, just to kind of see if, hey, is there a way around this? The word hack has kind of been, I don't know what the proper term for it is, maybe evangelized or, you know, and now there's life hacks, you know, now there's all kinds of hacks for different kinds of things, you know, and there's websites for different types of hacks for, you know, everything from woodworking to anything. So when it comes, you know, it's just that kind of mentality, right? That hacker mentality that a lot of security professionals have as well. And that's fine. We should have that hacker mentality because we need to think like somebody who was trying to break into our network would be trying to think. So that being said, there are amazing products out there, amazing products to defend your network, to defend the devices on your network, to, you know, really do security in depth correctly. Where there's, and this is just my personal belief, some of the, you know, in my long career, some of the things that I've seen done and some of the things that are possible have just blown my mind. And the fact that, you know, that somebody out there was curious enough to be persistent enough to try to hack into something and actually achieve that. That's amazing to me. Again, something that claims to be 100%, I can't say that it's not possible. Anything's possible. It's not probable, I guess, is what I'm really trying to get at. Frank, do you have anything to add to that?
It's always a game of catch-up. I mean, in this field of cybersecurity, right, there's always an attack that you haven't thought of, right? And it's nobody's fault. It's just somebody else is thinking of things in a different way. So it's always a game of catch-up. It's always an attempt to try and predict what bad things might happen. But like Dustin said, people are ingenious, and they're going to think of something that you didn't think of. Doesn't mean you're not smart. It just means that there's a lot of different ways to... We used to work with a guy, and he would always say... there's many different ways to skin the cat, but he always had the cat, like whatever problem he had at the time was the problem kind of thing. but he was right. There's many different ways to skin a cat. And if someone has enough initiative and drive, they're going to keep going. And sooner or later, usually something works out. Even if it's just a brute force thinking attack, I'm going to keep thinking about this till I can figure out a way to get in. So that, since it is inherently just a game of catch up all the time, I would never go out there and be like, this will protect you from 100% of cyber attacks. And what I've seen in the past is when incidents do happen, companies go, well, we didn't qualify that kind of experience as a cyber attack. Like with ransomware, they're like, oh, that's a ransomware attack. That's not a cyber attack. And it's like a legal loophole they jump through where they define what a cyber attack is on the day of the week kind of thing.
Right. And I mean, you know, we've all heard it 100 times. The most secure computer in the world is the one that's, you know, turned off, not connected to the internet, not connected to anything, and thrown into a room and locked up. But you know what? Even that's not 100% secure, because somebody could break into that room and then steal the laptop.
Exactly.
And then, of course, they'd be like, well, that's physical theft. That's not a cyber attack. But it is. It's all part of cyber now, right? That's why the word cybersecurity actually exists, is so we can encompass all of this stuff and say, yes, physical security, yes, digital security, yes, network security, host security. These are all encompassing. So we're not in our little silo anymore. We're all getting together as a community and utilizing our different skill sets in order to secure systems and networks around the world and companies, which is what we're all, I guess, kind of the end point is, you know, making sure that nobody can steal proprietary information.
Okay, and so let's say a listener of this podcast checks either Have I Been Pwned or some other site and realizes that they have been breached. They change their password, but what else should they do next?
There's a lot of different things that you can do next when you have a situation like this. Your accounts, you change your password account. Make sure that nothing suspicious has happened on that account. For example, say your Amazon account has been hacked. Make sure that there's no new billing addresses. There's no orders currently out, things along those lines. And just like anything else, you know, take the care and maintenance of these accounts to make sure that everything is operating as you want it to operate. What do you think, Dustin?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, you know, if the provider is not aware, alert the provider. If it's something that your credit card is attached to, you can always alert your bank. Banks are usually incredibly responsive to that kind of thing, and usually you get a new credit card number. You know, I think not to go back to, you know, how we're all working as a community now, but we really are. You know, it is one of those things now where it's like, you know, you call up your bank and you're like, hey, my account was compromised. They're like, oh, okay, no problem. You know, it's not really, you know, it's just kind of like these systems are in place now to help us fix it. To help us recover from an attack, right? We're talking about attack recovery and response and recovery at this point on an individual user level. So, you know, oh, my account's been compromised. I need to contact these people, let them know. Like Frank said, of course, go into your account, make sure that there are no strange logins from different IPs. A lot of providers have that ability now and have the alert ability now. Like whenever I log into my Gmail from a new computer, I get like 20 alerts, and it's annoying, but you know what? It's great too, because then I know, you know, first of all, it'll give me the IP address or at least the location of the IP address that was logged into. So if I'm not in New Zealand and someone tried to log into my Gmail from New Zealand, then that wasn't me. So someone's trying to hack my account. So there's a lot of different tools out there that can help, first of all, circumvent an attack, but also respond and recover from an attack. And again, lots of providers have this ability, and not only providers, but financial institutions and anybody else, any other thing that might be affected by it. You know, cybersecurity is one of those things that used to be in the dark and is now, you know, very slowly but surely coming to light, and everybody is a lot more open to talking about it. And again, we have these policies in place that help us recover from them.
Thanks to both of you. And that's all we have time for in this edition of the podcast. But if you want to be sure that you never miss another podcast with Frank and Dustin, be sure to subscribe to the Isoca podcast.